You could be right and I could be wrong. We could just fight and we could be strong. You could be right and I could be wrong. We could just fight and we could.
This is Bridge the Gap with Mark and Dave, the program that seeks for the truth no matter where it is found. I'm Mark.
And I'm David.
So the reason I want to share my story is because the good that I've done, the bad that I've done, the relationships that I've had and the ways, the dynamics of those relationships, I think they were all for me to learn and to be able to now in a healthy state reflect on and then turn around and help those that are going through similar things. And that's the reason I'm very open about sharing my story, is because I'm such a believer that if we go through something, then it just makes sense logically, and I do believe spiritually, to then turn around and be totally open to helping those that are going through or could go through something similar.
Well, great. I'm excited to hear your story. Where do you want to start?
So I grew up in an LDS family. My dad's a convert to the church. My mom has been a member her whole life. I was the all-American golden child, to be honest, up until I was 15, and playing all the sports in the world, really good at them, all that stuff. And then got injured, and I'd been hanging out with kids a long time, or for years, that were like drinking, doing drugs, stuff like that, but never did it. And then at 15, I decided, hey, I'm going to try smoking weed one time. Just one time, I'm going to try it, because I'm curious. Everyone says it's so bad, but I see all these people doing it. What's up? I'm very just honestly curious. And that one decision, that if you hooked me up to a lie detector test at that time, it was truly to try it one time. All of a sudden became a weekly, like a every weekend thing. Then during the week, and then I, you know, drank, and then I did cocaine, and then I did ecstasy, and then I did, you know, other drugs. And before I knew it, I was like a full blown drug addict at age like 17, you know, stopped playing basketball, stopped playing sports, played golf still for my school or whatever, but just really deep into drugs and alcohol. But the interesting thing is I was a fully active member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, like fully blessing the sacrament, holding a calling, going to church, bearing, and I didn't bear my testimony ever in church on like fasting testimony meeting, but like having a testimony and like just battling it. It was a battle for me. I would throw away drugs. I'd break paraphernalia and just like, hey, commit to doing better, but then go back to it. And but I was deep and I fell in love with drugs, to be honest.
Were you just keeping all of this hidden from your family?
Full on double life.
Like, did they even suspect that you were doing any of this at the time?
So to be honest, my memory of all those times are very hazy, very hazy, truthfully. They found stuff in my car. They found stuff all the time. Not all the time, but quite a few times. And then I would just bluff and lie so hard. And it's, oh, it's my friends. You know my friends. They do that. I don't do that. And then they would threaten to test me or something. And I'd say, okay, I'm not going to talk to you until we get the results back. Go ahead, test me. I'm not going to talk to you, get the results back. You don't trust me? And I would just lie out my rear end. Because that's what I did to everyone all the time.
Lying out your rear end?
Oh.
Never mind.
There are substances that
you would take that way.
I tried.
No way.
Because I just wanted to get high. I wanted to do anything I could do to get the highest I could get.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Oh, yeah, it is a thing because it goes in the bloodstream really fast. Anyways.
Well, I had actually read that the Mayans drank their alcohol that way.
Ooh, you'd get very tipsy very fast, that's for sure.
Yeah, anyway.
Well, the interesting thing is I always told myself, because I had a testimony, but a different type of like it wasn't super duper deep. So I always told myself, okay, I'm going to get a scholarship for basketball, and that's why I'm not going to serve a mission. I can't just say I'm not going to serve, but if I have a scholarship for basketball, okay, that's a good reason I could get out of it. But then I broke my ankle, had surgery, put screws in my ankle. I broke so many bones playing basketball in high school and just got injured. Then I got into drugs and fell away from basketball. And then it was like, okay, I don't have an excuse. I'm going on a mission. So I went on a mission. And those 2 years were heaven for me. It was like the chains were taken off. The first day in the MTC, I worked as hard as I possibly could and just loved every second of it. Like freaking, it was just like I could finally fly, and like I was just loved it. Worked as hard as I could, just tried to be the best missionary I could.
I'm just curious, and I don't know if you're, you know, were you, before you went on your mission, did you confess these things to your bishop?
Zero. Never met my bishop once.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just curious.
Yeah. I had no testimony of that. I had never done that. And the reason I didn't was because I will do anything not to let my parents find out.
Hmm.
Because if my parents found out, it would break hearts. It would all heck, just like the world would come to an end. And so, once again, if you hooked me up to a lie detector test at that age and said, why aren't you confessing? The answer would be, because I'm scared truly to death for myself and others if my parents find out about my double life.
Did you feel like your parents were not very tolerant of your lifestyle?
Oh, man. Yeah, not at all.
And why did you feel that way? Did they give you that vibe? Did they straight up tell you?
I don't really remember. There's a few instances. Like one instance, my dad found a paper that said I stole something. That's the other thing, too. I stole a lot.
Oh, man.
I really was. I, like, stole a lot of clothes, of everything, iPod, you name it. Anyways,
it's good that we're past the statute of limitations on this, aren't we? Yeah,
seriously. But my dad found something in the car that said, like, I stole something from Macy's, and he confronted me on it, and I lied to him, but still, he just let me have it.
When you say he let you have it, what does that mean?
I don't know if we'll air this, but he would probably be the first one to admit it, because he's also the one that changed. He's like had the atonement change him more than I think I've any seen anyone. And he's actually the one that saved me later in life. But anyways, he picked me up from school in the high school parking lot before I got my license. We drove to the corner of the parking lot, parked, and he didn't swear, but he swore this time, and he yelled and hit on the steering wheel and said, F this and F, or you're effing, you're screwing up your life, F, 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 as loud as he possibly could scream.
He was pretty angry.
Oh, man. And it was like, okay, you are never finding out anything ever again.
Because you can't handle the truth.
I guess. I mean,
that's what you thought. Well, obviously, your dad, the way he responded to that made you feel very unsafe about talking.
Yeah, you can't handle the truth didn't even come to mind. It was just like, you're not finding out anything that I don't think that you'll like, you know?
You resolved that at that moment.
And here's the thing too, up until 15, I was almost like a perfect kid. I'm serious. I was really well behaved, did good in school, like just a really nice kid, really good athlete, like the best out of all the kids around, and just everything was like, so it was just like, I just felt probably like I had to keep this like perfect thing going, you know?
Mm-hmm. You didn't want to disappoint your family.
Yeah, definitely. And then So then I go on my mission, get back. 6 months after getting back, I meet someone.
While you're on your mission, did you struggle with temptation to go back into the drugs?
Zero. What? I smelt marijuana sometimes, like on the streets of Spain. No temptation. The one thing I did do is there'd be a few P days where we'd go to do our groceries and I'd buy like 2 energy drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And I would drink them both and like clean the apartment, which was mimicking my addiction.
Really?
Yeah. And I wouldn't drink them for the work, but for the P day, sometimes I would drink like 2 and then like study or clean or whatever. That's the only thing I did. But
yeah.
Yeah.
While we're confessing things, when I was on my mission, I never had an addiction to alcohol or drugs or tobacco or any of that stuff, but I actually had more alcohol when I was on my mission than I have at any other time in my life.
And that's by accident,
yeah. Because I would be served something by an investigator who didn't know that I shouldn't drink. And one time they gave me some fruit that was, you know, saturated in brandy.
Mm.
And I started eating this fruit and like, wow, this has kind of got an interesting taste. And my companion looks over at me. He's like, hey, this is alcohol.
See, I wish that happened to me. But it never did.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And of course, I was just trying to be obedient. Like, well, okay, then we won't drink that.
Right.
You know?
Totally.
Or we won't have that dessert. Thank you very much.
Totally.
And, well, anyway, I could get into some funny stories, but this is your story. So go ahead.
So, yes, then I get back from my mission and get married. But then Adderall was a big thing for me. Was like probably the biggest thing. Someone I knew had some Adderall. It's like a study aid for people with ADHD. I always kind of told myself I have ADHD, and so I would take it. And then as soon as I started taking it, I started abusing it. Fast forward a couple years, fast forward just one year, I'm married. My 1 year wedding anniversary, I have a psychotic breakdown because of drugs and alcohol. I told my wife, hey, I'm studying for the finals for college and I need like to really study. So she went to visit her parents out of state when the truth was I had already dropped out of school, wasn't going to school at all. And just dropped her off at the airport, drove, bought a whole bunch of drugs, went to her parents' house, which is where we were living, in state, their other house, and just did.
Was this in California?
Utah.
Utah, okay.
When I was going to BYU, or I dropped out of BYU, but I told, anyways, did a bunch of drugs and then just tripped out and freaked out. I was spying on my own house, seeing things, seeing like the windows and seeing open and closing and people that weren't there. And then
you were hallucinating.
Big time. And then I called my wife and told her, hey, I know you're in the house. I know there's an intervention going on. I can see you in the house. And she's like, David, what are you talking about?
And I was she know you were on drugs at this point?
No, but I told her on the phone call.
That was when she found out.
Yeah. On the phone call, I told her everything.
Can I back up for just a minute?
Yeah.
So how long had you been married? A year?
A year.
And
she knew I drank here and there. She knew I did drugs socially because...
Like before your mission or after your mission?
Both. Yeah.
So you were pretty honest with her.
We had done them together. Yeah. But here's the thing. It's just like everything. It's just like in high school. There's people that did them kind of like a normal person would do them at a party, whatever. And then there's me who takes, you know, three times as much as everyone else. The next day keeps some and takes some and then takes something else and just can't stop, you know? And like, so she thought I was just kind of like a normal person that
he wanted to have fun.
But then pretty quickly she saw like, okay, you do more than just have fun. Like you take it to an, you, it takes over.
Yeah.
So she was seeing it and we, and yeah.
You know what I find interesting about that is that, the way people approach this, some people think it's just the worst thing ever. And others think, ah, it's just no big deal. You know, just do it every recreationally from time to time. Everybody's got their own level of how bad that really is. Mm-hmm. Like I was always taught the word of wisdom was drilled into me from a very young age that it was so important because I had lived in the mission field and my mom was having to teach a lot of people in Texas where I grew up as a younger person that, yeah, you know, who is a Mormon? And she would have to start, well, we don't drink coffee and we don't drink tea and we don't smoke. Because that's what a Mormon was to a lot of people in that period of time when I was younger that didn't know who Mormons were. Mm-hmm. You would start with the word of wisdom. Mm-hmm. And so it was, you know, I had DNC 89 memorized when I was 10 years old, you know, because we would be asked that. And it's like, well, what do you tell a non-member? Mm-hmm. Why don't you smoke? Why don't you drink? You know, well, this is because we're taught this and this is why. Mm-hmm. And so I was always taught from a very young age to take it very seriously. And then later on in life, I learned that there are other people that kind of take it as a guideline.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. See, I was the exact same way as you growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden I started hanging around people that did it, but I was so against it.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't do it. Like at 14 and a half, I would go to the parties with the seniors and they'd all be doing drugs and drinking and I wouldn't. And people would look up to me like older girls would be like, why don't you do it? Like, what's going on? Like, they were just mesmerized. Like, and it was like, I could feel the power I had, and I could feel, and I was just like, cause I don't believe in it and blah, blah, blah. There's nothing good you get out of it. And like, I would preach like, and then all of a sudden curiosity just killed the cat. Or in other words, like Satan just got deceived me, and I tried it, and all that stuff that I learned my whole entire life didn't line up with my experience. My experience was, it was harmless. It was fun. Nothing bad happened. There was no negative, a lot of fun, a
no
lot
consequence.
Of no consequence, but not only no consequence, but an incredible out of body spiritual experience. Like not
a reward.
A reward of one I was seeking, of like getting out of the day to day, getting into it was just like, okay, I just teleported. Like I was living life on the earth with my feet on the earth, and then all of a sudden I'm floating. Like, whoa.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then I look back at all the stuff I was taught, and it's like, huh. You know, just didn't match up. And then it's like, okay, I'm gonna try that again.
You know what's interesting too, as you say this, I'm old enough now that's not tempting to me.
Right.
But if I were 16 years old and my best friend told me what you just said, I'd be very curious too. Mm-hmm. I just never had a 16-year-old buddy tell me that.
Right.
I had friends that were doing those things, but I was always the one that was the, you know, let's not talk about it in front of Mark because he wouldn't understand. Mm-hmm. And so they kept it from me.
Well, one thing I want to touch on, which I think is really like probably one of my main missions here on this earth, I want to point out that me doing the drug or like having that first experience wasn't, how do I put this? It was totally okay. What wasn't okay, in my story, luckily it turned out okay, but there should have been communication lanes open for me to talk to people that love me, that cared about me, about my experience. And that's what I want to have with my daughter. And I just don't know how. Because how hard is it, right? Where like your parents believe something so much, just like I today believe something so much. And how do you have the relationship where like your son feels like if he does the complete opposite, he can tell you, you know, because what could have happened is I could have talked to them and said, hey, I smoked weed and oh my gosh, it was so crazy and fun. And can we talk about this? Like, why shouldn't I do this? It was like, and that could have been a magical conversation. That could have been a journey into understanding and teaching and like, and us together. Cause now what I'm, and it just hit me, what I want to understand more is like, there's something there. And I'm not saying it's good, but it's just, it's something that's like, it brings you into the spiritual realm, and it's probably the dark spiritual realm, but it's the spiritual realm. And I do think it is the dark. I know it's the dark realm, but it is the realm that's not just here physical. And I swear it can be a lesson. Like, yeah, Dave, did you see that? Like, now let's talk about the spiritual things. Like, cause there's good, you know. And anyway, so that's the part that I want to just try to open up the conversation for parents, especially parents that are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints or any other group that really believes against doing drugs or drinking alcohol or whatever, and just somehow keep those communication lanes open.
And it would be hard for somebody who's not gone through that experience. I wouldn't know how to.
If your kid came to you and said that, yeah.
I just wouldn't relate. Go ahead.
So I'm watching this show right now called The Cleaner. It's a true story about this guy who was addiction and all this stuff. And then God basically came to him and like said, and they came to a pact on he was going to be God's, like not avenging angel, but something like that. And just help people pull people out of deep addiction. And he pulled like hundreds and hundreds out and he started a treatment center, and it's a true story and everything. But anyways, as you're saying that, it's like, okay, yeah. So, you know, your son comes to you, you don't know how to respond. So you go to that LDS guy that you heard on that podcast who like totally is like, that's what he wants to do is help bridge that gap. Mm. You know, yeah. Like honestly, because it's like, oh, perfect. Totally get it. Parent, totally get where you're coming from because I'm where you are at right now. Kid, totally get where you're going at because I was there. Let's talk.
Yeah.
Because there's so much to talk about and it's great. And it doesn't have to be negative at all. And all parties can learn and grow. And that would be awesome. Because I feel like that's why one of the reasons I'm here. And that's the reason I had those experiences so that I can speak to that and bridge that gap. Yeah, seriously.
Do you think that there's going to be people out there that hear your story and think to themselves, I want to keep my kid away from him?
Interesting.
He sounds dangerous.
Interesting. Yeah, totally.
And how would you respond to that?
There's a lot of people that heard Jesus and said, I want to stay away from him. I'm not comparing myself to Jesus, but there's just always people that aren't ready for the truth. Like they're still trying to pretend this world isn't what it is, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. They're trying to still pretend that they can shelter their kids, and that's an absolute lie. Because as soon as your kid turns 18, as soon as your kid leaves the house, how are you going to shelter him? And if they've been sheltered the whole time, good luck with them. Because mm-hmm. all of a sudden, everything is open. They've never talked about it. They've never touched it. They don't know anything. Man, I feel bad for that person. I'm scared for that person. Because yeah. those are the kids that overdose. Those are the kids that, you know, whatever. So I just think in the world we live in, if you're in touch with reality, you have to talk about stuff. Do I think people should try drugs and alcohol? Of course not. But do I think they should all talk about stuff like this and sexual stuff? I mean, that's even more prevalent. Like mm-hmm. the conversations need to be had. The communication needs to be open. And if not, you're living in a false reality.
Yeah, I'm at a loss for what to say because when I was growing up, my parents basically expected me to be perfect. And if I ever messed up, I was shamed for anything that I did. So I was afraid to mess up. And like you too, I wouldn't have wanted to go to my parents and admit anything that I had done. Any mistake I'd made. I was not perfect either, but I just didn't get into the drug and alcohol scene. But I slept school. I played hooky a lot. My brother, when I was 15 years old, wrecked a car up in Corner Canyon, and he came and got me and drove in the family car up to get his car. We fixed it, and then he had me drive the family car home when I was 15 years old, didn't have a driver's license. And to this day, my parents don't know that I did that, you know? And, you know, so I did my fair share of things, and I would never have told my parents anything that I ever did because they would not have understood. And I was afraid of the consequence that would befall me because anytime that I did do something that my mom found out, she embarrassed me with it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like being embarrassed. But then there was this other part of me that just didn't want to do bad things either. Mm-hmm. And when I did, I felt tremendous guilt over that. And that kept me from doing a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Just this inner guilt that I had that I was like, I don't want to feel that way again. Mm-hmm. And that was all self-regulated. But then there was this layer of family regulation on top of it. That was super oppressive.
Are you grateful for it?
I think, like you do, I was going to do what I was going to do, whether they tried to keep me from doing it or not. Mm-hmm. I don't think that I did anything. I didn't do anything that, well, I don't know. I look back, there was one party that I really wanted to go to, and my mom would not let me go to it. And I was so mad at her for not letting me go. This was when I was a teenager. And it was just because my friends were there and people would talk about these parties at school the next day. And I wanted to understand. I wanted to know what the fun was. Mm-hmm. But there were things going on in those parties that my mom was smart enough to know that she didn't want her child to participate in. And so she wouldn't let me go. And it did really upset me. And I never got to go. And I never experienced those things. I look back on my life now and think, well, what if she would have let me go? I would have experienced those things. A lot of those people that were going to those parties ended up going a different route. It was a different crowd. When I was your age, 15, 16, I gravitated to a group of friends that were different than the group of friends that were going to those parties. In my sophomore year, I was with a friend named, I've got to leave his name out, but I was hanging around a friend and we were sloughing school and doing things that we really shouldn't have done. And I just decided one day I didn't want to do those things anymore. So I stopped hanging around him and I found a different group of friends to start hanging around. And then that became my new group of friends, my junior and senior year. And then I was called on a mission. And this friend that I was really close with in my sophomore year came to my farewell. And we got talking. And I found out the day I was supposed to report to the MTC to go on a mission was the same day he was going to report to the court to find out if he was going to be convicted of grand theft auto and spend 5 years in prison. Mm. There was my dichotomy. Mm-hmm. There was the crossroads. If I would have kept hanging out with that friend, probably would have been going to court to find out if I would spend the next 5 years in prison instead of going on a mission for 2 years. Mm-hmm. I look at that and now, though, as an adult and having gained 50 years worth of wisdom, and I don't think it would have changed anything. Things happen the way that they're going to happen. There are no coincidences. Mm-hmm. We can't lament what coulda, shoulda, woulda happened in our lives. It happens for a reason. We just have to accept it and then make the most out of it. That's what the Lord wants us to do.
So going right on that point, I was going to say go deeper, but pretty much right on that point, how does that apply to, because I struggle, would I change my story? Not at all. Mm-hmm. Not at all. I wouldn't. Zero, because of so many reasons. So why should I make it one of my life's purposes to help teens not go down the path I did? Because it's like, that was a, why? Because 90% don't get to where I'm at right now. They don't come back, or they don't serve the mission, or they don't have a testimony. That's why. I'm the lucky one, the really mm-hmm. lucky one. That mm-hmm. I think I just answered my own question, because my story is not typical. Like the success rate for addicts is so low. And it's like, and I'm not saying I'm going to live successfully forever, but I think so. But anyways, so well, that's the reason.
Yeah.
If all could go and come back, then... yeah, no problem. Go for it, you know, but that's just not the case.
We're definitely waxing philosophically right now. Mm-hmm. So the deeper question here is, why would you even bother to teach anybody to do something differently than what you already did, right?
Yeah.
Because you were going to do what you were going to do anyway. So why not just let other people do what they were going to do anyway and learn from their experiences?
Yeah. I think because there's a better way. I think it's like, why send Jesus to teach us? Like, just let us do what we're going to do. No. Teach us the right way and then let us do what we're going to do. Like, teach parents how to communicate with their children and then let them do what they're going to do. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, that's what I think that's what God's plan is. He wants all his children, ideally, to learn the right way and then choose, not choose in the dark. Mm-hmm. And so if you can provide insight and, hey, here's a way to navigate this, they're still going to choose what they're going to choose, but at least they can choose it with knowledge that could potentially help them not fall as deep in the adversary's grasp.
Yeah. I think maybe a partial answer to our question is in DNC 123, where it says,
reveal hidden things of darkness.
Yeah. Because there are many good people on this earth who are only kept from the truth because they know not where to find it. Mm-hmm. They're seeking. They want to know. They want help. See,
that's my parents and me back then. We both wanted the right stuff.
Just didn't know where to find it.
Didn't know how to do it.
And now you can be the one to show them where to find it.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, it's interesting. So here's what I struggle with. Your mom said, okay, you can't go to the party. Mm-hmm. My daughter's four, and I've been teaching her that, like, she can do whatever she wants. Like, she can choose to do whatever she wants, because that's the truth. Because my parents told me I can't go to the party, and I still went. I snuck out.
You were smarter than me, huh?
I pretend I was sleeping. I snuck out and went to the party. And so I'm gonna really struggle with that when she's a teenager. Like, because I think it's silly. I do. I think it's silly for parents to say, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, tell me I can't do something.
Because you're going to do it.
There's going to be an opportunity for me to do it. Yeah. Whether it's now, tomorrow, or in 5 years. Like, you can't tell me I can't do something and really, like, you know. So
because that's compulsion, right? Isn't that really the satanic way?
But when it comes to parenting, isn't it different? I'm playing devil's advocate because I agree with you.
Yeah.
But like...
Well, and isn't this at the crux of most parental issues and just the love of a parent has for his child? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to let them suffer. I love them too much. I'm not going to let them burn their finger on that iron. So I'm going to keep them from touching the iron.
Which the best way to keep them from touching the iron is let them touch the iron one time.
Yeah.
You know, right. They'll never touch it again. I did. I kept touching that thing.
Like, well, maybe it won't burn me this time.
That kind of felt good.
Is it really that hot?
So what I think I'm going to do is negotiate, try to get her not to go or whatever, like really like plead my case and talk with her and share experiences and that. And then in the end, if she's just going to go, it's like, okay, what's the deal? What time can we talk about you being home? And just so you know, I will totally be awake and we're going to talk all about your experience, and I want to hear about it. I truly want to hear about your experience. But yeah, you can go. But let's just talk about it after. I'll be awake. What time? And then we come up with an agreement. And because my thing was like, I was sleeping over at the friend's house, and then it was on. Don't have to see mom and dad. I can do anything tonight. That so my kids will never sleep out ever, ever. Not one time will they be able to sleep out. Because that there's just this feeling that comes in that's like, oh, I don't have to go home. Anyways.
I agree with that too. Because when I was in Texas growing up as a very young child, I had a few sleepovers, but not very many. And the ones that I did have, my friends wanted to do things in the night that I'd never done before. And they were never good. And it was this new side of these kids that I knew at school was coming out when we were, you know, 11 o'clock at night when I used to go to bed. Mm-hmm. It's like, I would just see a different side of these kids come out. And so my experience was that nothing good happened at a sleepover.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And so, of course, as a parent, I would not want my kids to go and have sleepovers because of that experience growing up. But because I went through a divorce when my kids were young, I didn't have that choice. Mm-hmm. I couldn't enforce whether or not they would have any sleepovers because they didn't live with me in my home. Mm-hmm. And so I just didn't have a say in that. Mm-hmm. But I don't look back on that now as, oh, that just ruined my family's life because I don't believe things happen by chance. I think everything happens for a reason. I needed to learn something. My kids needed to learn something through those experiences. And we've been able to bridge the gap because we love each other and accept each other for who we are and our differences and in a belief because of the way we've turned out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I sit here buddying up with you. I think you're a great guy.
So I'm learning a lot right now about how to do what I want to do about helping people or talking to parents or whatever. And it's not telling them what to do. It's revealing the hidden things of darkness. Like, I used to think like, okay, hey, you want to talk to your kids and blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, here's what happens when you don't. Here's what happened. Like, reveal the darkness rather than like, so it's not, I don't want to tell people how to do it or how, because I don't know the answer, but I can tell you how the darkness works and what it wants and what will put more darkness into the situation and make the possibility for worse things to happen and stuff like that. Anyways, it's on a side note, but.
So what happened next? So we're back to where you have been married now. Were you married in the temple?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you have considered yourself worthy to?
We told our bishop everything. Did we slip after we told our bishop? Yes. But we felt like we went through the process. We were very open and honest. We repented. So I think, but we both didn't go to the temple for like over a year after our marriage. Mm-hmm. I think first was probably because we felt like technically we weren't anyways, but, mm-hmm. But am I happy we got married in the temple? For sure. See, I'm personally of the belief that like, do what you can do. Like, don't, I don't know. My whole line with all that stuff is really blurred, but go on the mission. Get on the mission. Do whatever you can do to go on the mission. I wouldn't say lie, but like, plead with your bishop or whatever, you know, like don't just, oh, I can't go. No, what do you mean you can't go? Okay, you messed up, talk to someone, figure it out, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so it's like, I don't know. I went on a mission completely unworthily and it was the best decision of my life, for sure. No doubt. Your dichotomy was like your friend going to the court or whatever. My dichotomy was like 1 week before my mission, I did OxyContin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or like a couple of days before my mission, I did OxyContin with my friend. He did it. I did it. I did it. And I got sick and I threw up and it was like, it pushed me away from it. He did it. He didn't get sick. He loved it. I come back from my mission. He's a full blown drug addict. Like to this day, he's been addicted to meth. He's been addicted to like, so like really deep addictions, but I got on a mission. I went on a mission a couple of days later and just 2 years of health, of spiritual stuff, of growth, of learning. And it was just like, oh my gosh, I escaped the freaking, you know. So anyways.
Wow, that's interesting.
But yeah, so I got married in the temple. Okay,
so you got married in the temple. A year's gone by and you're deep back into the drug use at this point. Mm-hmm. And you're hallucinating. And
one specific night
you're hallucinating, and this is when your wife really starts to understand how serious this is.
Well, because I called her and told her, and I called my dad, mm-hmm. and I told my dad, I mm-hmm. called people and told them everything because I was tripping out so much. Mm-hmm. And then my sister, who was living in Salt Lake at the time, drove to Alpine, Utah, and picked me up where I'm hallucinating. Mm-hmm. I get in the car, I'm hallucinating, I'm tripping out. I'm looking all around. We're driving to her house. I'm looking behind us, telling her they're after us, like telling, just losing my mind. Mm-hmm. And then like 2 days later, I went to rehab.
Hmm. So they're like, wow, this guy needs some help. Let's put him in rehab. Did you want to go to rehab?
No. So at that point, no, it was like, no, 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 no. And then there was this moment. I remember it very specifically. I was sitting in my therapist's office, my drug, because I was going to a drug counselor at the time. Mm-hmm. So they knew, like I was working on it a little. Wait, that's weird. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. So the big moment actually is a little bit before that. Just a little bit before that, I told my dad. So my dad, like I said, he changed. My mom too, like they really just changed. And I was scared for my physical health. I was having heart palpitations and like just really not doing well physically. And I, for the first time in my life, called my dad and said, hey, dad, I'm scared for my physical health. I need help. And that's when I started going to a drug counselor.
And how trying to keep the timeline?
Probably like 2 months maybe before this incident, something like that.
Before the hallucinating
and okay, going to rehab.
Yeah, so you've been married a year, you start hallucinating, and then about two...
No, been married about 9 months.
9 months.
Pretty okay. deep into Adderall.
Okay.
Lost a lot of weight, having heart palpitations, called my dad, hey, I'm scared for my physical health.
That's when you that you showed me a picture of you when you were just like, you know,
that six was years pack, and years and years. Oh, total, yeah, that was around that
total
time.
Abs and like
skin and bones. I mean, yeah, not like a in shape six pack.
Oh no, he's just trying to be nice, everybody.
No, that was drug induced. Nothing else. It was not eating. I didn't eat. I like forced down a few little crackers here and there.
Is that what it's like when you're on Adderall? Mm-hmm. You just don't want to eat?
When you take a lot of it, yeah.
It's a weight loss.
Oh, it's a miracle. It's a miracle. You take it and you're like, you could have the most delicious food in the world in front of you. And you're like, I have no interest. Because you're so satisfied.
See, already people are thinking this drug path isn't so bad.
Oh, and then you lose your mind and heart and soul. But anyways, yeah, that type of stuff I don't want to put in the podcast probably. But so yeah, so I tell my dad I need help. Then I go to drug counselor. And then anyways, so I'm hallucinating and stuff. And then, yeah, there's this moment when my dad flew into town. I'm meeting with the drug counselor and it was like, he recommended I needed to go. And it was like, no. And then something happened. And it was just like, you need to go. Like I felt it. And then I finally said, okay, I'll go. Once I went, yeah, I was so happy I was there. And that was when I had no idea why I did so many drugs. Like I didn't know about addiction. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew my uncle was a crackhead on the streets of San Francisco. I knew my grandparents drank a lot of alcohol. I knew my other uncle had trouble with drugs, but I didn't, you know, and then all of a sudden I'm in rehab and I'm reading the book of Alcoholics Anonymous and going to these meetings and hearing these things. I'm like, oh my gosh, these people get me. Okay. I get it. I know that you get it. This is me for sure. Like everything's ringing true. Totally finally understand why I did more than everyone else. Why I couldn't stop. Oh, it was like, okay, I get it now. That was really interesting being in rehab.
So how old are you now?
At that point?
Or now?
30.
And how old were you then?
23.
Okay, so I'm just trying to help the audience get some perspective here. That would have put you about 7 years ago.
Yeah.
When you were going through this experience. Mm-hmm. So we've got another 7 years to cover. Mm. Because you've been clean now for about 10 months.
10 months, yeah.
So we've got another solid 6 years.
Oof.
That we've got to cover here. Mm. I want to hear all about it.
Oh, man. It was crazy. So got out of rehab, was sober for about, I don't know, 60 days, something like that. And then smoked weed and then got back into doing, yeah, just cocaine and Adderall and just whatever drinking.
Professionally, what were you doing at that time? What did you do for a living?
So
you're married. When did your first child come on the scene?
Oh, not for like another three, not for another, well, let's see.
She's five now.
She's, yeah.
Four, so another year. Well, I'm just trying to do the math.
Yeah, she's four. She turned five in February. So, no, she didn't come on the scene until 2015.
Okay.
And I was in rehab in 2012.
Okay.
Yeah. So got out of rehab and, it was all about just trying to stay sober and it being really hard because I think I needed more treatment. I needed a support network who got it. Cause I'm a believer in this whole support network thing. And like, when you have people around you that really get what's going on and you're really open with them and they get it to a deep level, amazing things can happen. But if that's not the case and people don't quite get it yet, like my people around me didn't quite get it and they don't understand addiction and they can think they're trying to help, but they're not helping. And you know, and so just my whole situation wasn't set up to stay sober. It was all about, you know, So it was, and then I was married and it was just the cycle of like me getting high, trying to hide it, hiding it. And then all of a sudden her finding out.
Let me guess, you were hiding it.
Yeah, I was trying. Did everything in my power. And then
she's going out on a limb there.
Yeah.
You were hiding it a lot.
Yeah, I was. And then she would find out, and then I'd get, you know, and then it's like, okay, divorce and all this stuff. And I'd beg no and cry and plead no. And okay, I'm going to let you get another chance. And then same thing, just over and over. At that point, that was when I was going to school. We were living at her parent. Yeah. So for the next like year and a half, I was going to school. So I wasn't working actually. She was working.
So she was supporting you on your while you were taking drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Did she know this at this point?
Not really. She kind of would catch me, but I'd lie and like she had no idea the extent. But then here and there there'd be like, okay, I'm getting sober, and like 30 days of like, okay, and I'd get sober for 30 days and everything would be like amazing, but then I'd fall back, and then it was just this thing. And then finally it was like, okay, I get sober, and then it's like, okay, I'm leaving school. So I left college, went to go. And this is when I started working, and I went to Southern California to run a mobile auto spa and a car wash that we opened up at shopping malls in the Southern California area, and like a waterless car wash and stuff. And there's like 6 locations, and I went to go run it with a family friend of mine. And down there, I was sober at first, but then fell into stuff. And then that was when it got the worst out of any other time. I lived across the street from a Coke dealer that I found out dealt Coke. And I did a lot of cocaine and a lot of Molly, which is like ecstasy, pure ecstasy. And I would do a lot of it. And I would just like by myself and lying from everyone. And just like it got really bad.
I'm sure that was expensive too, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And so where were you getting the money for that?
I was working at that time.
So your paychecks were going to the drugs mostly?
Yeah. And she was working, and I just always found a way to like cash back. And there's a little bit of, I didn't like straight up take money from the business, but a little bit of it.
Oh man. I kind of felt that coming. I didn't know if you were going to say it or not.
There wasn't a lot.
Like, I felt like you were about to say that you stole money somehow. I didn't know. I could just see it in your eyes, but
yeah,
let's see. But what does a drug addict do?
Oh yeah.
Right. I mean,
I think I would still get my parents to like give me money at that time or something. I think I would like convince them to like,
you need rent money
or just whatever.
I don't know. You need something. There's always something that you need money for. Right.
Yeah.
But it's never drugs. It's always food or one of the, you know, necessities of life. So it's got to be for a good reason.
Yeah.
And so I'm...
And here's the thing. I wasn't just a straight up crackhead doing mounds of cocaine every day. I had a job. I had a family. I went to church. I lived a life. So it was like $60 today. 60, yeah. Like it was like $60 a day.
Okay.
You know, like right. You can just kind of squeeze that out. Sure. Like it's nothing too crazy.
$60 a day?
Probably. I don't know. Maybe like $30 a day.
Still, that's just,
yeah,
you know, $30 a day is $900 a month.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just squeezing it out. Cash back was a big thing. So I'd go buy a dollar thing and get $40 cash back, you know, all the time. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, and I'm not trying to judge here.
But yeah, I've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars
on drugs.
For sure.
Hundreds of thousands?
Yeah.
Wow, you could buy a nice home with that.
Well, in high school, it was my parents' money. But let's just fast forward to how I got better.
Yeah.
And
So there was about a 6-year period where it was just dark and cloudy.
But then light, trying to get better. And then all of a sudden, I'd get better. And it would be like, oh my gosh, like amazing spiritual experiences. And my wife, oh my gosh, she's getting healthy and blah, blah, blah. And like, it was just a roller coaster. Mm. People always, hey, how's life going? It's a roller coaster, you know? there, it's crazy. It's exciting. It's fun. It's like scared to death. I'm going to die. My whole life's going to end. Anyways. So what finally worked, and I'm a big believer in this, is a lot of things happened, but the main thing was there was my wife was the spearhead. She's the angel that just stayed by me through all this, which is miraculous. And it's not like she's a pushover at all. Like, she's the opposite of that. And that's why it's just a miracle. But she spearheaded it, told my dad, like, hey, he's really struggling. So my dad, my sister, my brother-in-law sat me down and said, hey, like, what can we do to help? We know you're struggling. Talk to us. Like, where are you at? And I just spilled everything. And I think they were like, whoa.
A little more than they thought that they would hear, huh?
Yeah. And that was November 25th of 2018.
Was that Thanksgiving Day?
No, it was like the day after.
Okay. Kind of the holiday season. Everybody goes over for turkey, and then the next day you spill it on them. You spill the beans.
Well, then it was like the next day I go back to work and I'm just doing drugs and drinking and driving all the way to Farmington, like really drunk, buying drugs. And I get a text, hey, Dave, do you want to talk with your dad and I tonight? My brother-in-law. And here I am, so messed up, driving. I'm like, how about tomorrow morning? So I stay up all that night. But then the next morning was November 25th, 2018, which is my sobriety date. And I talked to them and opened up, and then it was like, okay, what can we do to help? And we came to this plan of like, if I start my day off with an AA meeting, the rest of the day will go pretty decent. Mm-hmm. If I try to go to a meeting later in the day, I'm screwed. Like, I need to go first thing. Mm-hmm. So I found a 6:30 AM meeting. I started going every day, and I texted the group, my sister, my dad, my brother-in-law. They knew everything. I was excited to like let them know, hey, hit a meeting. I'd send them pictures like morning, like this, that. And then just went to AA for like 70 days out of 80 days or something like that, probably. Like pretty much every single day.
Really good. Yeah.
And then I got a sponsor and I worked the 12 steps, or I reconnected with an old sponsor of mine, my first sponsor ever. And this time around, it was just different.
Is there anything else you'd like to add to that?
Right now, no.
So this is Mark.
And this is David.
Until next time. Bridge the gap.
Truth seekers.